He actually really good defensively. I don't remember the last time any guys on our team took a charge. So he's going to bring that in.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. We're going to be recapping Thursday's action here on the show today. We're going to be previewing a 10-game Friday across the NBA and then shining that player spotlight on Andrew Harrison of the Memphis Grizzlies, a real surprise packet this season. That'll be later in the show, so make sure you're sticking around for that. We've got lots to talk about, so Michael Bolton,
let's get to it.
Going a little bit early on the podcast today, I'll check what the time is in that last game. We're halfway through the final quarter of the Timberwolves and the Trailblazers game, so you're going just a little bit early in terms of recording the pod today. Had my hot water unit blow up yesterday, so I've got to be get this done before they come in and start working and stuffing around. Really late arrival for them to come today, so had to get it out a little bit early. Otherwise, I'm going to be stuck with no hot water across the weekend, and that is not something that anyone is looking forward to. Let's start with the monstrous line of the night. It goes to a man whose game is still in progress, and that is Karl Anthony Towns. At the time of me recording, Townsy has played 34 minutes and has 33 and 15 with 2 steals and 3 blocks. He is 10 of 11 from the line, and he is 11 of 17 from the field, and those numbers can obviously go up as this game progresses. Nobody is going to come anywhere near catching him for the monstrous line of the night. Towns has been fantastic. He's been a little bit up and down in the games without Butler. Some weird low shot attempt games, only 10 in the game against the Kings, 15 against the Rockets, had a big one against the Bulls after a slow start, but he looks like he's going to be putting up pretty consistent 20 and 10 games for the duration of Butler's absence, and he'll be a consistent top 10 fantasy guy. He's 8th overall for the year, averaging 20 and 12, 1.5 blocks, elite efficiency, which is where a ton of his value comes from in fantasy. Of course, the Timberwolves have one of the worst playoff schedules out of every team. I think they actually have the worst playoff schedule. So you might be at a 2-3 game disadvantage against your opponent's first round draft pick. So take that into consideration, especially when these big games from Towns happen. See if you can acquire another guy in that first round. Can you get Anthony Davis? Probably unlikely at the moment. Could you get Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant? Yeah, maybe getting those 2 extra games out of their first rounder might work in your favor, because as good as Kat is, it's really hard for him to catch up 2 games, or it might even be 3 games depending on the week. Most likely it's going to be 2. Or sorry, even if it's a 2-week playoff, it might be a two-game or 3-game deficit. It's pretty hard to catch up that sort of negativity in terms of games played. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Bogdan Bogdanovic of the Sacramento Kings. Bogdan, in the overtime game, had 23, 6, and 3. He hit 2 triples. He had 2 steals, and he was 53% shooting on 17 attempts. You know, I've been banging the Bogdan is the Kings' best player drum all season long. Over the last 3 months, he's a top 100 player, and it's been some weirdness in terms of limited role, shuffling back and forward out of the starting lineup, shuffling back and forward in terms of minutes played. But for now, until the end of the season, he's going to be a 30-plus minutes guy. He's going to score. He gets assists. He's averaging over his last 4 games, 4 assists per game. In fact, let's go back further. Over his last 25 games, he's averaging 4.1 assists. He hits threes. He can get steals. He's an okay-ish rebounder. Definitely not something spectacular there, but nice numbers from Bogdanovic, and he needs to be owned. He is obviously a rookie, but at 25.5 years of age, a well-seasoned rookie and a guy who's getting close to his peak contributions. He'll be better next year, but he can be a solid NBA starter and top 100 fantasy guy for the next 2 to 3 years, would be my early prediction on that. The young gun of the night is Bryce Johnson of the Clippers. It's Ben Simmons, the player that Mike Wilbon said that he would want. Was it 100 out of 100 times on his NBA team over Ben Simmons? So it's not Bryce Johnson. It is Simo, who had 18, 9, and 8 with 2 steals, with 1 block, 8 of 14 from the field, hit both of his free throws. He is the 29th ranked player in fantasy this year, doing that all while shooting 57% from the line on 4.5 attempts, which is a huge, huge negative. So if you're punting free throws, you're talking about a top 20 player here. It is hard to overcome that sort of a negative in free throw percentage in a rotisserie league. So probably a guy that you want to, you know, discount or put on the back burners in terms of drafting him. Recovering from almost a -3 Z score in a category can be really tough in roto. But in head to head, you're punting that category. Then the 16.5, 7.5, 7.5 with two steals and a block on 53% shooting. They are elite numbers. They are top 20 numbers and they will continue to be that way. Will his free throw percentage ever improve? Maybe. The last month he's at 62%, which is obviously well above 57%. And if you get yourself to 66 or 67%, then you're not as big of a drain on free throw percentage in fantasy leagues and you become more of a viable rotisserie league option. Could he become a 70% shooter? I reckon that's probably the absolute ceiling, but it's not a complete, complete write-off that he does get to that level. He has been excellent this year. He is my clear pick for Rookie of the Year. And continues to put up these really strong performances right across the box score, does everything fantastically defensively. The last time that he did not get a steal in a game was on the 24th of January when he had a triple-double and had two blocks. He didn't get a steal in that game. Prior to that, it was the 30th of December. So there's been one game in 2018 that Ben Simmons has not gotten a steal for you, which is an incredible, incredible streak. Maybe it's not that incredible. I'm sure it happens plenty of times. But for a bloke who's giving you triple-doubles, giving you double-doubles, you know, scoring with high efficiency, blocking shots, and giving you big steal numbers, it's really, really valuable. And those steals are what really elevates him right up the top of the fantasy rankings. You get two steals per game. Yeah, that's right up there in terms of equaling his assists in terms of overall fantasy value. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Hassan Whiteside had 6 points and 7 rebounds and nothing else. He was 1 of 4 from the field. He was 4 of 4 from the line and he was not very good. Only played 18 minutes against the Lakers. He'd been playing well recently. In fact, he'd had, how many did he had? He'd had 6 or 7 double-doubles in his previous 8 games before this one. The minutes had been fluctuating from between 22 up to 34. But I didn't really see this low minutes coming against the Lakers. Yeah, Brook Lopez can stretch out a bit to the floor. Julius Randle can be a problem at times, but I thought they'd give more playing time to Whiteside in this one, especially in the last game after Adebayo only got 6 minutes. And we had Kelly Olynyk starting at power forward, so taking away his backup center minutes. But Whiteside struggled. This has been the concern with him all season. Just the minutes fluctuating. He's under 26 for the year. He's still a top 50 player in that time. But over the last month, he's played 11 games. He's at 12.5 and 11.5, and he is actually ranked outside the top 100. To me, that's not an indication to drop him because it's coming on the back of some piss-poor free throws, shooting 55% on 4 attempts, when for the year he's a 69% shooter. So that is a big difference, a big dip. It's an increase in attempts, and it's a drop in percentage by like 15% or 14%, sorry. So that's really what's dropping that ranking significantly. And people ask me, why is someone, so low? Why is Dennis Smith Jr. ranked outside the top 200? It's because percentages on large volume have a huge, huge impact on rankings. You can get zero in a stat and there's a flaw to that stat. Like a flaw is in a thing you walk on. You can't get any lower than zero. But with percentages, you can continually get worse. You can just keep getting worse and keep getting worse and keep getting worse. There is literally no bottom to how bad you can get in that category. You could go 1 of 40 from the free throw line, and then someone could come out and go 1 of 41, and then someone could come out and go 1 of 42. And I know these numbers are unrealistic to have that many free throw attempts, but there is literally no limit to how bad you can be in that category from a mathematic standpoint, not necessarily a realism standpoint, but you can always get worse in that category. So when you have a bad streak of field goal percentage, and it's why I always tell you, if someone says, someone's ranked 180th or they're ranked 10th over the last 2 weeks, look at the percentages because they are the biggest short-term changes in ranks. Yeah, you can, if you have a really strong, you're shooting 64% from the field for 2 weeks, you'll jump 50 spots. You shoot 40% from the line for 2 weeks, you'll fall 80 spots. Those things make a big difference just because of that wide range of, there's no actual baseline in those categories. And I'm getting off track here talking about Hassan Whiteside, but that's just an explanation of why he's ranking so low. So don't take it as an indication that you need to go and drop him. Let's go into these games now and break down the action that we did have on Thursday. The first one of these games we're going to talk about is the Lakers and the Heat. This is a huge win from the Lakers. They are 15-7 over their last 22 games, and they are absolutely rolling despite the injuries impacting them. We know Josh the Hitman Hart's out with a broken hand. Corey Brewer was waived, so they had no wing depth at all. And something I talked about on yesterday's podcast is maybe they'd get Kyle Kuzma, the future MVP, to play some more small forward, and that's exactly what we saw happen. They ran an 8-man rotation only. And that could be stretched even further with Brandon Ingram suffering a hip flexor injury. Now, he seems to think it's okay. They don't play again till Saturday, so he should be fine. But if he is out, they have got one small forward on the roster, and his name is Luol Deng. And they're not going to be dusting him off to get him out there to play. So we're going to see some interesting lineups if Ingram misses, with Kuzma at the three, with Isaiah Thomas, Lonzo Ball, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope potentially starting at the 1, 2, and 3. Lots of different weird things that they can do. Throw some more Gaz Payton, the Mitten, out there at the 2 also to play some defense on wing. So that are, there are other options they can have. Now, as for Ingram, he was great once again. 19-5-5 with a triple one. Julius Randle was good too. 25-6-2 with a steal and a block. But I want to talk about Lonzo Ball for a second. 34 minutes for Lonzo back in the starting lineup and only had 8 points. And you might look at that and go, that's a shit fantasy line, but that's where you can make a difference between other owners and yourself, is by realizing that 8 points isn't a shit line, because he had 2 triples. He had 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 6 steals, and shot 60% from the field. Over the last 3 months, Lonzo Ball is a top 25 fantasy player. And yes, that does include his piss poor free throw percentage. I tweeted this out today and people go, yeah, but he kills your free throws. He is ranked 25th, including the free throws. So you take those out and that's a comfortable top 20 guy. He has shown strides in that. He's shown strides in his three-point shooting, shooting 38% from three over the last 3 months. His field goals is up to 43% in that time as well, and his free throws are up. They're not huge, but they're at 58, I think, as opposed to 50% for the season. He has got a, he's almost a lock, I believe, as a third round pick next year. Almost a lock for that. A lock for the top 30 and a real significant chance to be a top 20 guy. And in punt free throws, he will almost definitely be a top 20 player next season. If he can get himself from scoring 9 points a game or 10 points a game to scoring 16 points a game, you're talking top 10 sort of guy. He could be 10, 8, 8, 2, 2.5 threes, a block per game. He can do all of that, and that's, you know, pushing. Maybe it's not the top 10, maybe it's a top 13, top 14 sort of a zone. But for as much as you might hate his dad, for as much as you might hate the Lakers, for as much as you might hate Lonzo, for whatever reason that is, yeah, he's playing very well. The shooting was an issue. It has improved significantly over these 3 months, and his fantasy value is absolutely through the roof. Isaiah Thomas looked much better as well. 29-4-6 with 6 triples. Still, of course, he has to be owned. He should never have been dropped, but if he was, go and add him. And again, with the Hitman missing, with Ingram potentially out, he's going to be playing more than those 26 to 27 minutes. It's going to push up to 30-31 as we saw in this game. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, had 16-6 in 28, while KCP had 18-4. A pretty strong game there from him. Onto the Heat, Adebayo, as I mentioned, played 6 minutes in the previous game. He played 30 in this one, started at power forward in the second half, and had 15-10 with 2 blocks. His minutes are inconsistent. They are all over the place. There are many other fringe centers out there that I would rather own for this season. A guy we talked about yesterday, Jakob Poeltl, the table, Montrezl Harrell, Dwight Powell. These guys I'd clearly have out over Bam, but I think that Bam has got a real chance to be the starting center for this team next season, if not the year after, and be a consistent top 100 guy after that. He's shown me a lot more this season than I expected him to, but I think the minutes are going to be inconsistent. Joshy Richardson started off poorly, ended with 15 points, still brings the other stats, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, 1 block, and that helps when he has those poor shooting nights. While Dwayne Wade was hot once more. Just a ludicrous fadeaway behind the backboard shot he had also in this game. 25 points on 61% shooting. We know that those numbers aren't going to sustain. Justice Winslow also looked good, but his 64% shooting won't stick either. 17-5 with 2 steals and 3 triples. I'd be leaving him just for the deeper formats. While the iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, had 19 points, but it came on 19 shots. And I think we can officially rule Jim Johnson out of standard league ownership. Kelly Olynyk started. He was piss poor, missed all 5 of his shots, had only 3 rebounds and 2 assists, and I wouldn't be looking at him as a 12-team league guy. While Scooter Magruder chimed in with 25 minutes with both the Duke and Tyler Johnson sitting this one out, and he put up 10 points in his second game for the season. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Bob Cove, the best sign I can say here for Covington is the fact that he played 41 minutes. He had a 10-10 double-double. He had a steal and a block. They're okay numbers. He hit two triples, and that's just enough to just keep him hanging on. In a 10-team league, you got to consider dropping him. In a 12, you do probably hold, but yeah, he had been piss poor prior to this game. This was just a little bit of a relief performance. JJ Redick's minutes are down once more. 29 minutes here, but 22 points is strong, but 64% shooting is also not something that will stick. And him, instead of playing 33, if he's playing 28 to 29, his value devolves more into a 3-point streamer. Ersan Ilyasova returned to the Sixers for the first time this season anyway. 6 points in 18 minutes for Ersan, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. But I guess the biggest impact here is that he took Rashawn Holmes back out of the rotation, something that we predicted would happen, and it has. So any hopes you had of Holmes carving out a role is likely not going to occur. Šarić had 16 and 9, very little else. Got a late game dunk. And then Jordan Clarkson was pissed off that he scored on them after the game was apparently over and threw the ball into his back. I don't care what you think about that. No, actually, I do care what you think about that, because if you don't want him to score, Clarko, stop him. Simple as that. Don't get pissed. To me, and again, I don't understand this mentality. Surely it's more disrespectful when the game is, you know, at that sort of stage, if Šarić just stands around and dribbles to himself, effectively saying, you guys are so shit, we don't even need to play the whole game to beat you. We don't even need to. We can just literally stand around, scratch our nuts, sniff them, then go back, go through our legs and throw the ball up in the air. That's how bad you guys are. But actually playing the game and scoring, oh man, the disrespect, and then almost started a punch on, Šarić is like, mate, good on you. Clarkson got ejected. That sort of sharp shit is just bullshit. If you didn't want him to score, put in the friggin' effort earlier on. That is absolute bullshit from Clarko. In saying that, Clarkson played more minutes than George Hill, so I've got no idea what to grasp in terms of this Cavs point guard rotation. Hill had played over 30 for 3 of the previous 4 games and then played only 22 here, as Clarko played 26. 7-3-3 for Hill, 10-3-4 for Clarkson. I'd have Hill every day of the week over Clarkson as a fantasy ownable guy, but if this shit's going to keep going, then Hill becomes more of a streamer. LeBron had 39-8. Well, Larry Nance didn't get into foul trouble, so he played 26 minutes. He had 13-7. He had a steal and 3 blocks. He is significantly better than Tristan Thompson. He has been better than him in every game they have played, and he should be owned in all standard leagues, Larry Nance, in my opinion. Fouls will be the issue, but if they're not there, he's going to play 25-plus minutes, and he's going to be productive. J.R. Smith, the plumber, he was suspended for conduct detrimental to the team. I have no idea what it was. It was something that occurred after practice, not involving a team member, so I don't think we can use any laying pipe jokes in this scenario. He was suspended, so Rocket Rodney Hood started. He played 39 minutes and he had 11-5-5. This should be all you need to know that Rocket is not a 12-team league player. Kyle Korver, excellent 3-point streamer, and that is about it. The next game we'll talk about is that Brooklyn Nets and Sacramento Kings game. Went to overtime. Damari Carroll just continues to play well. 22-10-4 in 34 minutes. I don't know how they're going to work out the minutes when Rondé gets back in that starting lineup, but maybe Rondé doesn't. They took Quincy Acey completely out of the rotation in this game. Rondé played 26 and Damari played 34. The Blue Swimmer had 20 points with 6 triples in 35 minutes, and D'Angelo Russell played 33 minutes. So those three guys who I thought might be in danger of losing some playing time when Rondé came back, none of them did. They all played over 30. Jumpin' Joe Harris went down to 24. Rondé played 26 and LeVert played 20. And again, a more sensible rotation from Kenny Atkinson here. D'Angelo Russell, 33 minutes, 15-2-12 with a steal, a block and 5 triples. We love what he does from a fantasy point of view. I'm not a massive fan of his on-court game. He does put up good stats. I think he is limited by his, I guess, lack of athleticism moving forward. But in terms of him for the rest of this year and looking ahead to next season, I think he's going to be a really, really strong asset. He's already playing pretty decent minutes here, putting up good stats, and I think it's going to remain that way for the rest of the season, which is obviously great if you manage to grab him off the waiver wire at all. When he was dropped or when he was hurt, if he wasn't dropped, whatever happened there. Dante Cunningham with those backup minutes, 7-6. That is deep league stuff only. De'Aaron Fox was great, sent the game to overtime, ended up winning the Kings the game here. 21 points, 2 steals and 2 blocks. Really efficient night from him, something you shouldn't expect all the time, but really strong numbers. While Budrick played 36 minutes, second highest on the team, and that's what we want to see. 16-4-4 with 3 steals. Now, I've shit on this Kings organization plenty of times, the way that they run things management-wise, coaching-wise, so I don't need to go into a big rant here again, but this Again, what are you hiding? Why are you not telling us who is playing, who isn't playing? What the hell does it matter for anything? Why did you tell us you were doing this 7 weeks ago, stop doing it, your injuries, but still didn't play young players anyway, even though there were young players available who didn't play? And now we're back to it. Zach Randolph out again, resting in this one. We had Garrett Temple rejoin the rotation, Costa Koufos return to the rotation, but not only did Temple return, but he played 31 minutes. I don't understand it at all. Obviously, you can get rid of Randolph in 12, 14, 16 team leagues. Temple and Koufos weren't really playing a role there either. It's going to be Bogdanovic, it's going to be Foxy, it's going to be Budrick, it's going to be Cauley-Stein, and it's going to be Labissiere, who had 11, 3, and 2 with 2 steals and a block. They're your 5 guys who need to be owned in all standard leagues. Justin Jackson played 24 minutes. Again, he should be playing 30+. No one wants to see 30 minutes of Garrett Temple. And you can say whatever you want, but even if you weren't tanking, The logical decision is not to have Garrett Temple play 30+ minutes. He's just not that good. Not much else to talk about with that game. Let's have a look to see what that status of that Blazers-Timberwolves game is. Oh, we've got 30 seconds to go for that one. So if I just go through here and refresh these box scores, we'd be able to give a bit of a rundown on what actually went on in this game with about 30 seconds left. Perfect timing, in fact. All right, so is it up on the screen for you guys? Yep, there it is. All right, so Towns at this stage with 30 seconds left, he's at 34-17. We talked about him already. Wigo had a pretty decent game in terms of bulk scoring, but the efficiency is way off. 20 shots for 21 points. Nemanja Bjelica grabbed his 12 boards. I think he's more of a 14 team league player. The minutes are clearly going to be there. Taj Gibson struggled. Jamal Crawford did very little. Other news from the Timberwolves today is Shabazz Muhammad had his contract bought out, and he's going to be signing with the Bucks. Now, Shabazz Muhammad is not a good player. Buzz is not a good player. He is very bad. He's a bad defender. He doesn't pass. He can hit some threes now. He's a beast offensive rebounder, but he is a really piss-poor player. Advanced metrics really dislike what he can do. But this is something that I was talking about with Thibodeau and the Wolves the other day. Is that, Muhammad's come out and said that he wants to, leave so he can join a playoff contender. Like, you're on a playoff contender. But the fact that the bench absolutely gets no go at all, he was clearly unhappy. Did that factor into his absolutely piss poor play this season? The fact that he couldn't just get on the court ever at all, even 6 minutes a game, 7 minutes a game. Now, he's been bad. You can make more excuse, or not excuses, you can make more of an argument for why isn't Marcus Georges Hunt playing in these rotations. But it's something I talked about. It does impact the locker room. It does impact the mental state of these guys. And we hear guys like Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson saying we need to play the bench more because it does impact the morale among these players. And now Shabazz is going to leave. Now, he's going to head to Milwaukee. He's not really going to do anything there because the sexy boy got waived. He wasn't really playing. Look, Shabazz is not going to be a regular part of the rotation for the Bucks, but he was just clearly not happy. This is a team that's the third seed. He's clearly not happy with the way that team gets treated. And I think that's going to be a relatively common theme. We'll see how it goes, but I do think that's the case. Onto the Blazers. Lillard started off, missed his first 9 shots. He's currently on 33 points, so he obviously rebounded. Eddie Davis had a really strong game, one of the best rebound streamers out there. And Yusuf Nurkic, only 19 minutes for Nurk, but still, the production's fine. So the minutes, you don't like it, but at least you get decent production out of him. The Chief.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He's currently sitting on 10-12 in 28 minutes there, while Shabazz Napier played 27 minutes and had 14-3. So another strong Napier game. Got 2 steals, excellent steals streamer, and 3-point streamer. He got extra minutes because Mo Harkless hurt his knee early and wasn't able to return. Evan Turner started the second half, but it's been Napier who's got the bulk of those minutes there in Portland. All right, let's go on to talking about this player spotlight, of course. That is, today's player spotlight is going to be, well, not going to be, it is Andrew Harrison of the Memphis Grizzlies. This guy was atrocious last season. There's pretty much no denying that. He played 20 minutes a game and averaged 6 points and had a true shooting of 48%, hit 32% of his field goals, averaged 2.7 assists. But if we have a look at what he's been able to do this season, he has got his shooting up significantly, up from 48 true shooting to 54 true shooting. And in fact, over the last 2 months, he's at 58, above league average. He's hitting 40% from threes in those last 2 months and averaging over 5 assists per 36 minutes, hitting his two-pointers, getting about a steal per 36 minutes as well. The scoring is up, the usage is up. He has really turned things around. It was a doubt that he was actually an NBA caliber player. But he has turned himself into a significant backup point guard in the NBA. Now, his advanced statistics aren't fantastic. The team is 7 points better off with him sitting on the bench as opposed to him on the court, and that's never great for a team as bad as this. His box score plus minus stuff is negative. He's got a below average PER. He's still sitting at a below average true shooting, but it's been the last 2 to 3 months that things have really started to turn around for Andrew Harrison. And he is going to be in a nice, solid backup point guard role ahead of a guy like Mario Chalmers, who probably won't be back next season, depending on what pick the Grizzlies get, whether they get a point guard or not. You would think they're in the top five, and there's not really, unless it's Luka Doncic they're getting, who probably plays on the wing anyway. They're unlikely to be moving Harrison out of the rotation anytime soon. But this little stretch that he's having is probably going to be the best stretch of his career. Over the last month, he's the 88th ranked player, averaging 15.5, 3.5, and 4.5, giving you half a steal, half a block on 48% shooting. So numbers that are significantly higher than anything that he did last season. The usage is at 23%. The true shooting's at 59% over that last month. And he is really taking advantage of Tyreke Evans' injury. But we don't know when Evans is going to come back. They're dealing with a myriad of injuries. Wayne Seldon, Chandler Parsons, all these wing players that is pushing him into larger minutes and a larger usage role. So from now until the end of the season, it feels like Andrew Harrison is a must-own guy. But if you're in a dynasty league and your trade deadline hasn't passed and you are perhaps not in contention this year and you've got Andy Harrison and you can get some sort of asset back, some sort of first-round draft pick, some sort of other potential top 100 player moving forward, I would do it. I don't think there's any way he's going to be able to parlay this into multiple top 100 seasons or shit, even any top 100 seasons in fantasy. For as good as he has been and as improved as he has been, and I give as many tips of the hat to him as I possibly can, he is still a negative player. He is still a below average, or maybe he's an average defender at his position. There's still many, many things to improve upon to get there. Plus, his opportunity next season isn't going to quite be where it has been for this stretch run. And we see that with many players at this point of the year in their first or second seasons. They will often have runs that will never mirror anything else they do in their career, much like a Jordan Clarkson did in his rookie season. He's always that name that comes to mind who puts up this monster run March and April and then just has no ability to replicate it because the situation that enabled that run to occur isn't something that's likely to be replicated. All right, so that's Andy Harrison. Grab him now, but don't put too much value on him in the future in terms of future assets for dynasty-type leagues. We do have 10 games coming up on Friday in the NBA, so let's get into those, preview them now. The first one we're looking at is the Detroit Pistons and the Orlando Magic. The Pistons are favored by 3 on the road. The total is 213.5 points here. Hopefully John Isaac returns. I wouldn't be looking at him in DFS under any circumstance, though. At point guard, Ish Smith at 6,300. Point guards against the Magic, it's always really tasty, but Ish is as up and down as they come. Absolutely no confidence in him in cash. But of course, because it's the Magic, and because Ish can have these games, you have to look at him in tournaments, but that would only be it. He does make a good tournament play. DJ Augustin against his former team, 4,900. The performances from him recently have been solid. I don't think that I love that. I know that I don't love that for cash, and I think the upside is quite a bit limited there for Augustin, so that's a fade. Bikes and Mack and Langston Galloway, no thanks. At shooting guard, Fournier is at 5,800. No worries with using that in cash. I think it's pretty solid there. Very limited tournament upside, but he can drop you a 40 or two occasionally. More of a cash guy, though. Luki Kennard, no way. At small forward, Reggie Bullock at 4,700. He's all right. I don't think he's got very high upside. I think his floor is not too bad. Maybe a cash play, but there are better options out there on a 10-game slate. Well, Stan the Man Johnson dropped 35 in that last game. Very, very unlikely he does that again. So that's a fade. Well, Johnny Simmons at 49. You know my hesitancy with using him under any circumstance. Mario Hezonja at 4,500. He had 25 in that last game. Great. That's great at 4,500. But it was in 19 minutes. That sort of level of production on 71% shooting is something that's unlikely to be repeated, and he has played under 20 minutes in two consecutive games. And if Isaac's returning, that's going to put Hazonia's minutes even more in a bit of a clamp. So I think that at 4,500, you can go in a better direction. Jim Ennis started the last game. He's a minimum salary player, but he only played like 15 minutes in that start, so very little to see with him. At power forward, Azza Gordon, 7,700, played through his hip injury. I think that he feels like almost a lock for 35 points, and I like that for cash. Blake Griffin at 7,400, his salary has tumbled. He is less than Aaron Gordon because he's been much worse than Aaron Gordon, averaging only 23 points over the last three, 25 over his last five. Can't get anything to fall. Of course, that makes him a brilliant tournament option because everyone will be off him, but there's a chance that it just continues to roll the way it is, where he just can't get anything going. Biombo, Tolliver, nope. At centre, Nick Vucevic, 7,500 for Vuce. He has, and Pistons fans will be able to attest to this, he has done well against Detroit in the past, averaging 47 the last three times these teams have met up. Has been a little bit down the last couple of performances with a 27 average over his last five. Some of that involves injury, though, of course. At 7,500, I think you do have to look at him as a decent option. While Drummond at 10,500, I just think that's a little bit high. I would like him at 9. I'd like him at like 9.2, 9.3. I think 10.5, where you're expecting 52 to 53 out of Drummo, is probably just a bit too high, in my opinion. Let's go on to the DraftKings side of things. Now, Drummond at 9.9 on DraftKings with that double-double bonus, I'm much more into it over there. I can get behind that. As Gordon at 73, I love that on DraftKings. And then Smith for a tournament play because of the matchup, similar story. Augustin at 47, maybe you want to look at a tournament. Well, I love Fournier in cash at 57, so very similar stuff the same sort of stuff that we've got on FanDuel. The Charlotte Hornets against the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers on a back-to-back, one of two teams playing a back-to-back. They are favored, Philadelphia is, by 3.5 points, and the total is 216. So sort of middling in terms of over-under for this game. Justin Anderson could be back, but he's probably not going to be a rotational player. While we need to check on the statuses of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Cody Zeller for the Charlotte Hornets. Both players are questionable. Both players missed last game. If Kidd-Gilchrist is out, we look at Jeremy Lamb. Trevion Graham perhaps as a tournament guy. And if Zeller is out, maybe Frank the Tank becomes a tournament guy to take a peek at. At point guard, Kemba is at 7,800. I don't really, the matchups are negative for Kemba Walker here. Ben Simmons is very, very good defensively. 7,800, I think you can do better than Walker. Yeah, look, he probably will get you 32 or 33, but I'm just not sure he's going to get quite enough to be worth it on a large slate like this. TJ McConnell, Michael Carter-Williams, no thanks. Although Carter-Williams sneakily averaging 26 points over his last three games, which is comfortable value at that salary. So he has been sneaking it in. Just maybe a tournament play for Carter Williams, as dumb as that sounds. JJ Redick at 49 and up. Ballinelli against his former team, nope. Nick Batum, 7,300. Has been playing fairly well himself. I'd much prefer Batum actually over Kemba just because of the $500 less. But I still don't think it's a very good play. Dario Saric at 7,100, that's too high. Marvin Williams at 38, he's not good enough. Very little to like in this game, actually, from DFS point of view. While Benny Simmons at 8,900, I think that is a worthy one to have a look at. I think he can easily exceed 40 points or 50 points here in this game, so I don't mind using Simo there. While Frank the Tank, as I mentioned, if we have Zeller out of this one, I like him as a tournament play at 4,400. At center, Embiid's at 10,700. Perhaps the minutes get rolled back a little bit on a back-to-back, but we haven't really seen that being the case so far for him. 10.7 is a pretty expensive price, but we know the upside. It's 70, it's 80, it's 90 points for Embiid, so it makes him a good tournament play. Well, Dwight Howard is now down to 7,500, and I am in on that. He averages 40 the last three times against the Sixers. You feel like you're going to get 30 out of him almost no matter what, which is not quite where it needs to be, but it's a pretty decent floor, so I'm all about him. While Zeller or Bill Hernan Gomez, I don't think, are going to get it done for DFS. On DraftKings, Embiid and Covington, 4,800 for Covington, a tournament option. Embiid the same at 9.4, but you could absolutely switch Embiid to cash there with just how low that price is. I think Kemba at 7,800 has a little bit of value, but nothing spectacular. And Simmons at 8.6, I'd be all about that. Saric at 6.4 actually is a pretty decent price. I think the back-to-back scares me off a little bit there for Dario, but there is some value in him at 6,400. And Jez Lamb, of course, we look at if Kid Gilchrist is sidelined for the second consecutive game. The Warriors and the Hawks. The Warriors are favored by 13. The total is 227, the highest listed total we've got at this point. Nothing really to be too concerned about injury-wise. At point guard, Steph's at 9,400. And yes, I know there is big blowout potential here, but yeah, Steph can still drop 45 in three quarters, so I like him in this matchup. Dennis Schroeder's at 7,100. Got a pretty good record against the Warriors, coming off a 37-point game in his last one in 32 minutes. His minutes had been trending down prior to that, so I would use him very cautiously, but point guards have done very well against the Warriors recently, so in your tournament mix. Malcolm Delaney, no. Sean Livingston, no. Isaiah Taylor, averaging 20 over the last three games. He's at 3,900. That is some value, but I also don't think that there's very much upside there. Kent Bazemore's at 56. Yeah, probably not for Baze, to be honest. The minutes are down. His play is poor. We can fade Klay Thompson as well. Small forward Durant, 10-2, the same story as Curry. Yeah, it could be a blowout, but he can drop 50 midway through the third quarter and do it pretty comfortably. The matchup is absolutely superb for him. Formerly, that is the artist formerly known as Torian Prince, 5,400 for him. He is on a roll, averaging 35 over his last three games. Obviously, the Durant matchup is a little bit of a concern for him. Will he get worn out defensively? Would Durant engulf him and swallow him up? Or will they just throw Iguodala out there? Whatever it is, it's not a great situation for Princey. But he has been crushing the numbers, so I've got no problem with considering him part of a cash lineup. Not a core guy, but part of a lineup, or even as a tournament guy. At power forward, David West at 3,900. He just seemingly cranks out numbers every game, but there's very little to like there for DFS. Draymond's at 8,100. Probably just push the salary a bit too high, despite how positive this matchup is. I'd leave that alone. Well, the Baptist, John Collins, 6,100 for Johnny. 6,300, sorry. I don't hate it for cash. I think his floor is pretty solid. I'm just not sure how big the tournament upside is there, but he could be a cash option. At center, The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman. He dropped 40 in the last game. He's at 5,800 here, The Undertaker. I don't think he's dropping 40 again. I think that he is a center who can potentially stay on against the Warriors. He can move his feet okay. He can defend a little bit out in the perimeter, and that's sort of what you need there. But they could also make the decision to go to Mike Muscala and John Collins, making Dedman a somewhat risky play, but also improving the GPP ability of Mr. Mike Muscala, who's at 4,200, and he had 29 in his last game, and he can easily get to 26 or 27 again. And you knock down some threes, get some blocks, which are things that he does, and that can really easily return that sort of value for you. So I do think Muscala is a sneaky GPP type of a guy. On DraftKings, Durant and Curry, we love them for both formats. Well, the Baptist is at 5'9 over on DraftKings, so I like that. But again, more for tournaments there. Prince at 6,000, that definitely takes him out of my consideration. Muscala in a similar boat at 43, same as FanDuel. Let's go with that for upside GPP guy. And Draymond, way more in the conversation on DraftKings at 7,700. Let's crack on now. Get into the next game. It is the Denver Nuggets and it's the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies have got Wayne Seldon and Andy Harrison as questionable. Harrison, who I just spoke about in the player spotlight. Tyreke Evans is out. Deontay Davis is out. Chandler Parsons is out as well. So if we're going to have Harrison and Evans out, you're going to be getting Kobe Simmons and Mario Chalmers as DFS options. Chalmers would become an interesting cash guy. Simmons is a GPP player. As for Seldon, if he is out, it just bumps up the minutes of guys like Ben McLemore and Mike Henry, players who you really don't want too much to do with. But I think we're going to see a little bit of a boost for a guy like Jarrell Martin and Jermichael Green in that scenario as well. At point guard, the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, 6,900. I feel like that is too high, a slower pace sort of situation. Hasn't really been hitting that level recently, so I'd fade that. While Andy Harrison is somehow priced higher. He is priced higher than Jamal Murray. He's been putting up the numbers, there's no doubt in that, but I wouldn't be using a questionable bloke at $7,000. Mario Chalmers, as I mentioned, minimum salary. I'd be all about that if Harrison happens to sit this one out, but it never feels like a great scenario to be relying upon Mario Chalmers in your DFS lineup. At shooting guard, Gaz Harris, 6,700. Just get you 30 every game, which is absolutely fine at that price. 40, 50-point upside. No problem with using him in cash, and the matchup's sexy. While Farton Will Barton at 7,800. I don't know if Paul Millsap's going to be starting, but if if Paul Millsap is starting, then Farton Will Barton would likely go back to the bench, and that would impact his minutes. He is at 7,800 because he's putting up numbers. He is relatively inconsistent, and that could really hurt him, and I think that that would be a pretty strong fade. Mike Henry, Devin Harris, Wayne Seldon, Ben McLemore, Malik Beasley, that is a murderer's row of piss-poor shooting guards, so let's leave them out of it. Dylan Brooks at 4,300. No, thank you. Baby Neck, 5,600 for Wilson Chandler. Unbelievably, just puts out numbers every game now. Apparently, just decided he knows how to play again. 35-point average over his last five, but if Millsap pushes him to the three, does that nullify his effectiveness? I think that's a real possibility, and that would lead me to fade him, despite that salary still being relatively attractive. Jarrell Martin at 52. Given the players absent, I'm aboard using him at 5,200. He's going to play big minutes, as is Jermichael Green, but he is at 6,100, which I fear is just pushing it a little bit too far for Jermichael Green. I don't think he's quite that good and doesn't have that upside. Paulie Millsap at 5,600. I'm in on that price. Love it for cash. All about it for tournaments. It's still way too low, clearly. He is going to be on a minutes limit, but it wasn't like he was out with leg injuries. It's more just a conditioning thing. So it was his hand. I think he's totally fine to use. Mason Plumlee and Ivan Rabb, no way. And Trey Lyles, minimal minutes for him. At center, Marc Gasol, 8,500. He has been playing extraordinarily well. 41 average over the last three. I like the matchup for him against Gasol. Feel like he could almost write in 40 points here for Mark and be happy with it. So I think he's a decent bet. While Jokic is at 9,600, a nice price drop for him. The Gasol matchup, despite Gasol falling off somewhat as a defensive center this season, he still is a negative impact against opposing centers. So 9,600 for Nick, I would look at Jokic more there as a tournament guy rather than a cash player. On DraftKings, very few guys that I actually really like here. You could consider Gasol, the Blue Arrow at 6,500, but no one who would make my core playlist. Actually, no, Jarrell Martin at 4,500 I'm pretty in on, and Gaz Harris at 62 are decently interesting options. And of course, we're looking at Mario Chalmers if Andy Harrison does have to sit this one out with that wrist issue that he's dealing with. The Dallas Mavericks and the Chicago Bulls. The Mavericks are favored by 1.5 and the total is 213 points. At point guard, Dennis Smith Jr., 6,200. Point guards against the Bulls, always tasty. He dropped 32 the first time against the Bulls. That should be, you know, a realistic assumption that he can get to that level again. No worries with using Dennis Smith Jr. Chrissy Dunn at 6,700. I think I'd fade Dunn. With Levine back, he's just got a little bit of a cap on his ceiling, and that price is $500 higher than Smith. I would take Smith. Jose Juan Barea, 6,100 for JJ. He's on the bench now, so that leads me to consider him a fade, but the matchup is super sexy. So if they do start him, then there is something there. More GPP, though, for JJ. Yogi Ferrell and campaign, no. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews, no. No. Not interested in that. While Zach LaVine, up to 7,900. And while we like what LaVine can do, we know he can put up numbers. That is too high. And I don't think that there is tournament value, and I don't think it's a cash play. Denzel the Hammer Valentine at 4,800. This is the last game of this current Bulls rotation. Apparently the Bulls are going to change things up for their next game and do it in 5-game blocks. I don't see what the need is to bring Justin Holiday back in. I don't see what the need is to bring Robin Lopez back in. What can they do? Will they start the Hammer? Will they try and see how that goes? That would be an interesting thing to see what they decide to do. Will they start Noah Vonleh over Chris Felizio? So there is going to be some things changing, but things are going to be the same in this one. Denzel at 4,800 is playing quite well, so I actually like using him here. David Nwaba at 4,800. He's also putting up some pretty good numbers, and you could use either. I wouldn't want to use both, but you could use either of them in cash. I would lean Denzel's way a little bit more because he does have that scoring upside, which can be a little bit easier to crack up the numbers with. Not crack, crank up. The pencil, Harrison Barnes. Big game in the last one for Harry. He's at 6,200. Yeah, I think that's fine in cash. I think he gets your 30 pretty comfortably there. At power forward, Dwight E. Powell, man on a mission. Dwight Powell, 5,600. Yeah, let's go. Big men against the Bulls have been playing very, very well. Dwight Powell's been playing very well. That's a great combo. Lauri Markkanen at 6,000. I only feel comfortable with him in tournaments at the moment. He's up and down with his cash play. While Punchbob Shiploke at 6,600, just not getting the playing time, unfortunately. So I don't think that you can use him. Dirk is at 5,400 and has been averaging 27 over the last five. So that is bang on where you want it for cash. I don't think there's any tournament value in Dirk, but there is pretty nice cash reliability with that sort of level of production for what Dirk's been giving you. All right, centers now. Chris Felizio, 4,100. I think you got to look at him as a tournament play. He had 26 in 26 minutes in the last game. The minutes have been up. The production's hit or miss, but the Mavericks aren't necessarily a great defensive team at the center position. And Nerlens Noel, your other guy out there at minimum salary, sure, if you want. I just don't think it's really going to work out, so he wouldn't be a guy that would be very high on my my radar. And DraftKings, Levine's at 7,100, so I like that a lot there. And I like Smith at 64 over there. Both those guys have value, as does the Hammer at 48 for both cash and tournaments. Dunn at 6'4 is in a better spot than he is on FanDuel, so still something there. Punch Bob, no. Berea, a little bit too high also, I believe, as is the pencil. Harrison Barnes. Let's move on to the next game. We've got the Toronto Raptors and the Washington Wizards. The Raptors are favored by 3. The total is 216.5, so perhaps not a game that's going to be a blowout, so maybe we don't see as much Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl. The Jedi, OG Anunoby, is doubtful with a sprained ankle.
Hello there.
I would assume that Norm Powell starts, but I also assume that DeLon Wright and Freddie VanVleet get a real bump in their minutes, as does CJ Miles, with Powell doing pretty much nothing. At point guard, Thomas Satoransky's at 5,900. The production's been a little bit down from Thomas lately. It's a negative matchup here. I don't think I'd go his direction in this one, while Fred VanVleet at 4,900. I think you can use VanVleet in cash just because of the extra minutes he will get in Anunoby's absence. Lowry at 7,800. And DeLon Wright at 4,200. Of course, Lowry at that price is fine. He has had a record of sucking against the Raptors. I think there are better options out there. At shooting guard, Beals at 7,900 dropped significantly because he was bad in that last game, just 18 points. It's a real negative matchup, shooting guards against the Raptors. But I like that still for Beal. I think you can use it in cash, but I love it in tournaments. Whereas DeRozan at 8,200, I actually really like that for cash as well. He's got a 46 point average against this Wizards team the last three times they've met up. Norm Powell, again, not using him. Small forward, Oubre is at 5,300. I feel like he's giving you 27 every night, and that's absolutely perfect. Love that matchup there for him. Otto Porter at 7,500, also just cranking out numbers consistently with a 43-point average in his last three games. The usage is up. The efficiency is held. That might be getting a little bit too high, though, for Otto. I don't think it's quite there, so it is usable, but it's not one of the best options on the board. At power forward, Markieff's at 5,600, a strong game from Morris in the last one, but the prior games hadn't quite been at that level, but that price isn't high, and I think there is total cash use of Markieff Morris. Well, Serge Ibaka at 53, really poor performance in the last one, but I expect him to bounce back, and I'd be absolutely fine with using him. Siakam at 4,800, amazingly averaging 26 over his last five and 30 over his last three. They just seem like just unbelievable that you could get that you could have Pascal Siakam actually averaging those sort of numbers. It just doesn't seem right at all that he would be averaging that sort of production. But you know what? It is what it is, as the kids like to say, I believe. I think that's what they say. Who else are we looking at? Oh, centers now. Poeltl's at 4,900, also putting up some strong numbers. I just find it hard to use either of these guys here, while Jonas Valanciunas at 6,200 and Marcin Gortat at 41. Gortat's got a good record against the Raptors, averaging 29 the last three meetings. So at 4,100, no one's going to be rostering him. I would be interested to throw him in a multiple GPP lineup type situation, but definitely don't feel super confident about it, would be a fair way of phrasing that. All right, let's flick it over now to DraftKings and have a look at the guys here. I like Satoransky on DraftKings at 5,500. I think he's worth a look over there. DeMar DeRozan at 75, I absolutely love that. Beal, I think, is probably a little bit too highly priced. And Otto Porter at 7,000, also a strong play. Valanciunas at 53 is a GPP guy, and Oubre at 51. Lean more GPP on DraftKings than I do with him on FanDuel. I think he's a cash guy on FanDuel, but he's more of a GPP guy on DraftKings. All right, let's head over to the next game we're going to talk about now. We've got the Indiana Pacers. They're taking on the Milwaukee Bucks. Don't have a spread currently for this one. Yanni left the last game due to an eye issue. He should be fine to go. While Tone Snell and Matty Dellavedova are both currently questionable, dealing with thigh contusions and ankle sprains respectively. If those guys miss, then you're going to have Sterling Brown start. You're going to have more minutes for Jason Terry and very little value in either of those players. At point guard, Corey Joseph dropped 4 points in 31 minutes in that last game. That's awesome. He's at 4,700 and you should want nothing to do with him. Eric Bledsoe at 7,600. Bledsoe's giving you 30 every single night, so I have no problem with using Bledsoe, even though this matchup is a real negative. Point guards have struggled against the Pacers. I would, if you've got other options, I would take them, but I'm not completely off Eric Bledsoe here. At shooting guard, Vic Oladipo, $10,000. He just keeps doing it with defensive numbers all the time. I have to love using him, just consistently bring it. And he's doing this. He's averaging 51 over his last five while shooting really poorly, and that's fantastic. Chrissy Middleton's at 75. His numbers have dipped with the return of Jabari Parker, so I think I'd fade him. And small forward, Yanni Antetokounmpo, $11,000. Just an absolutely horrendous performance from Antetokounmpo in that last game. I think he looks to bounce back here and he should be a strong cash and tournament play. Lance Stephenson, the little dog, Bojan Bogdanovic. Well, you can look at Bojan, I guess. 5,300. Those other two, probably not. 5,300 for Bojan, but still more of a tournament guy, and I don't think his upside's that high. Jabari Parker only had 8 points in 18 minutes in the last game, but prior to that, he'd played 24 minutes. He's at $5,000. I do think that you can use Jabari. I think his minutes go back up. The Muppet, John Henson, at 5,600. Don't have any trust in his playing time at all. Sabonis at 55 and Thad Young at 64. I could see Thad at 64 being useful, but I think the matchup negates that. While at center, Miles Turner's down to $6,000. It makes him a good tournament option. I would want nothing to do with him in cash. His numbers are just so inconsistent. Of course, we're not using Thon McCur or Tyler Zeller. On DraftKings, I like Jabari, Oladipo, and Yanni for cash and tournaments. Value in all those guys. Well, the Muppet actually does come into play on DraftKings because he's at 4,600. That's a tournament play. Thad's at 62. Interesting for cash, and Bledsoe the same at 7,200. Let's go on to the next game now. We've got the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Phoenix Suns. Tyson Chandler is questionable. I put that much closer to doubtful. While TJ Warren missed that last game with a bruised ass, He is questionable also. If he is out, obviously the value really does go towards Joshie Jackson. And if Chandler is out, we're going to get much more Alex Lennon, Dragan Bender. At point guard, Russell Westbrook's at 11,900. I said that Steph could get those big numbers in three quarters. Westbrook could get a 40-point triple-double in about a half here, I reckon, against Phoenix. He's at 11,900, and it is really tough to fade him. I think Lord Alfred Payton is also in play at 7,200. He plays well against the Thunder when he was a member of the Magic. He's going to have more license to play and shoot and score on the Phoenix Sun, so he's got an ability here to get to 40. He's averaged 44 against Westbrook and the Thunder the last three times, so he can really exceed that here. I believe he's a really good play. At shooting guard, Devin Booker's at 8,800. That is getting pretty high, but his numbers are high. 45 average over his last five games, 53 over his last three. No Andre Robertson to shut him down. Yeah, really hard to go away from him. I think that price might scare you a bit, but he's just putting up numbers consistently, so no worries there. Shaq Harrison, Troy Daniels, Terry Ferguson, Alex Abrines. I don't think you want to use any of them. Joshie Jackson's at 5,700, just crushing the numbers at the moment. 34 average over his last five, dropped 52 in that last game. TJ Warren takes a little bit of the shine off him if he does return, but we're smashing Jackson if Warren's out, and I still think he's a strong play regardless. Paulie George is at 8,700. I think you're getting 40 out of Paul George feels a fait accompli here in this one with comfortable 50-point upside. Great matchup, decent salary. I like Paul George a lot here. TJ Warren at 7,100 had been playing really well before that ass bruise. I think there's a chance his minutes are a little bit lower here in this contest, even if he does play, so I think he's a fade. Mello at 6,000, I can't get behind it. He's doing jack shit at the moment. No interest. Jeremy Grant, Marquise Chris, Dragan Bender, no interest in them. Bender, perhaps. His minutes have been up. His production is just not there, though. At center, Steven Adams, 7,300. This is a great matchup for Adams. Hasn't quite been at that 7,300 level, though, so I think you can probably find a better center out there on the board, while Leonard, 5,100, is the ultimate GPP type of an option, someone you don't want to rely upon in cash under any circumstance. On DraftKings, Westbrook is at 11.8, Booker is at 8,400, and Lord Alfred's at 6,800, which is a brilliant option. I think all those guys are cash and tournament plays. Paul George probably fading more on DraftKings because his salary is just so much higher, and I don't really see anything from Adams, Warren, Mallow here, and Josh Jackson at 6,200. I'd love that if TJ's out, but if TJ's back, I think that price makes using Josh Jackson a little bit prohibitive. Well, other way around, that price is prohibitive to using him. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Utah Jazz. Taj Gibson did have to leave today's game with a hip contusion. So if he is out, we're all about Gorgui Dieng, who's at $4,000. We don't know that yet, but it is a back-to-back. So Taj might be in a little bit of trouble with that hip injury. So we'll see that Gorgui Dieng is going to have some significant value there if that is the case. And they may actually have to play Marcus Georges Hunt because they might have to move Nemanja Bjelica up to the four a little bit as well. And dare I say it, will we see Justin Patton's first ever NBA minutes? Probably not, would be my guess. At point guard, Rick Rubio, the Ravishing one, 6,500 for Ravishing against his former team. Is there anything to see here? Well, not at that price. I'm not interested in using Rubio at that sort of a salary. Well, Jeff Teague, 7,500 for Teague. Back-to-back, negative matchup. I'll leave that alone. Shooting guard, the Don Mitchell, 7,700. I've got no problems with using him there. The numbers have been a little bit muted, but nothing terrible. So I think that you can get behind him. Wigo at 6,500 is always just a tournament guy. At small forward, Jingle and Joe's too expensive, and there are no other small forward. Oh, actually, it's not true. There's Nemanja Bjelica at 53. I don't really like that. Royce O'Neal at 3,600. Not really interested in him with a relatively healthy team. At power forward, Jeng's at 4,000. We're loving that if Taj is out, of course. Derek Favors at 5,300. Not really feeling too excited there. Jay Crowder at 45. Crowder's getting lots of shots, so I think that is a strong GPP option there for Jay against this Timberwolves team. Taj is at 6,000. Yeah, I think that's probably a little bit too high to use even before the injury. At center, Townsie's at 10-1. Yep, I don't care that it's a back-to-back. Let's go back to him. He's just constantly putting up numbers. Well, Gobert at 7,900. Not quite at Towns' level DFS-wise, and centers have really struggled against the Timberwolves recently, excluding today where Ed Davis had a bench double-double. But 7,900 for Rudy, I think I would leave that alone in majority of situations. On DraftKings, I like Towns at 9-1. That's brilliant. Gobert at 6-9, totally fine with that. And Ravishing Rick at 5-9 is a great tournament option. The Don at 75 is also pretty strong there. And Joe Ingles at 57 gets a little bit more interesting, but definitely not a first priority type of guy. Let's go on to the last game of the night. It is the New York Knicks and the LA Clippers. Danilo the Rooster Gallinari has already been ruled out for the Clippers. We don't know if Ty Wallace is going to play. It seems unlikely at this point. Manny Moutier is at 5,100. I'm all about Moutier here. Had 42 in his last outing. I think that this is almost a lock that he gets at least 25 points, which at 5,100 is what you want. And around 30 is a pretty good bet. I like him a lot. Austin Rivers at $6,000. Nah, I'll leave that alone. While Milos Teodosic at 4,300. He got the start in the last game. Put up 24 in 28 minutes. And I think that he is a GPP option to go for 30 here, perhaps. Frankie Ntilikina at 3,700. I don't really feel much there. Trey Burke at 5,400. Obviously cranking out numbers. High usage, high efficiency. Things which feel like they won't stick, and I wouldn't want to use Trey Burke in cash. But if he can get me 35 points, which he's averaging 39 across his last three, then that is totally fine at 5,400. So a good tournament option. CJ Williams at minimum salary. Could he have another start in him with the Rooster out? Sure. Could he be shit? Sure. But could he drop 35? And he has had a 38-pointer already in his career. So yeah, he could do that. So that makes him an interesting minimum salary tournament guy. Lou Williams at 8,000 is probably too high, despite how good the matchup is. And Timmy Hardaway at 6,100. He has a good matchup himself. I'd be looking more for tournaments, though, for Tim. At small forward, Mick Beasley at 5,500. I don't like the way things are trending, so I would leave that alone. On Troy Williams at 36, probably also not really that interested. At power forward, Montrez the Table Harrell is playing very, very well. He's at 4,800 and averaging 26 over his last five. I think that you can actually use him in cash. Don't think that his upside is significantly great, but he is a solid cash guy that you should get your 24 to 25 given how they're using him, especially with the Rooster out. Toby Harris at 7,500. The matchup's pretty good for Toby. He does well against the Knicks in general. I'm no problem with using him there at all. And while at center, we've got Cock at 4,600. That's too high. DeAndre Jordan at 77, not really getting to that level, while Enes Kanter at 6,000. I think those two guys, including O'Quinn, are all fade-type players. On DraftKings, I like O'Quinn, though, at 3,900. He's in a much better spot on DraftKings, and Teodosic at 4,500 is good, and as is Manny Moutier at 53. I think that's a pretty strong play, and Austin Rivers at 58 looks appealing. The matchup's appealing. I just don't know that I'm totally convinced about using Austin Rivers in this matchup. All right, at the time of recording, DraftStars hadn't loaded up their contests for tomorrow, so I'm not going to be going through any DraftStars picks because nothing was up. But I'm going to give you the Yahoo ones and the Moneyball ones. So let's go through Yahoo, who we've got looking at here. Four tournaments, the Blue Arrow, Jermichael Green, Jarrell Martin, Reggie Bullock, Marcin Gortat, Frank Kaminsky, Frank Ntilikina, Mike Muscala. And for tournaments and cash, we've got Siakam, Poeltl, Crowder, O'Quinn, Felizio, Teodosic, DJ Augustin, Trey Burke, Montrezl Harrell, Oubre, The Undertaker, Jabari Parker, The Hammer, Dwight Powell, JJ Barea, Dennis Smith Jr., Paulie George, Steph, Townsy, Drummond, Durant, Embiid, and Westbrook. And on Moneyball for tournaments, Antetokounmpo, Embiid, and Durant, Dennis Smith Jr., Andy Harrison if he plays, Jermichael Green, Milos Teodosic, Cristiano, Felizio. And for cash and tournaments, we've got Moutier, Harrell, Millsap, Jarrell Martin, Oubre Jr., Jabari Parker, Valentine, Joshie Jackson, Dwight Powell, Lord Alfred Payton, Marc Gasol, and Russell Westbrook. Don't forget, if you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go leave a 5-star rating and a review. And you can also find the show, on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and of course YouTube, where you can subscribe, leave a thumbs up, and leave a comment. Have a good weekend, guys. Make sure your DFS lineups go well. Hopefully you're in the head-to-head playoffs. Your rotisserie teams are looking strong. Good luck across the weekend. May we not have any more injuries. Make sure you are listening to Locked On NBA, as I'll be hosting the Monday edition next week and every week moving forward, so check that out. And if you don't know who I am, if you somehow came in halfway through this show, I am Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Got a new profile pic, so go check that out over there. I'm sure that's really high on your agenda. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Joel Embiid.